Welcome back, folks. This is Padraig from the Humble Coach Podcast. We're kicking into episode 32. I'm joined by an excellent coach. I've had a really nice run of coaches in the last while, and it's not stopping just yet. So I'm joined today by an excellent coach called Kevin Don. Kevin, thanks for joining me.
All right, well, thank you for having me. It's great to talk to you.
Good stuff. So guys, some people may know about Kevin. He has a fantastic company called Strength Bias Training. And we'll let you have a little bit of a chat about what your background is, and then how you got into coaching, if that's okay, Kevin.
Yeah, sure, definitely. So my background is actually, I've always been coaching sport. I started coaching a Japanese martial art, which is called Kyokushinkai. It's just a form of karate, really. I started coaching that, and then I moved out to Asia. I was living in Hong Kong for more than a decade. And I was coaching martial arts there. And it was through that I got into trying out CrossFit. One of my CrossFit students was asked to invest in think of a new CrossFit gym, which was in Seoul in South Korea.
Nice.
And he said, "Hey, I've never heard of CrossFit thing. Why don't you come up and try it?" I said, "Okay, I'm going to try that out." Mm-hmm. I went up there, I went on a skiing trip, and I went to the gym. And the first workout that I did was the Filthy 50. Mm. And it really, really kicked my ass. And you know, this is quite a long time ago before people were really putting any thought programming. It was just, you know, every time you went to the gym, it was just hero wad after hero wad after death by whatever. And, you know, so I did this Filthy 50, and it was very, very difficult. It was horrible. And what I really liked about it was, you know, people coming and encouraging me while I was still working out, people that had already finished. So this was my first introduction to this community aspect of training. And after that, I went back to Hong Kong and I decided to investigate more about CrossFit and the functional fitness for myself.
Nice.
From there, I went and did a level one. Made the mistake that a lot of people do is that I opened had a level one and then opened an affiliate straight away and had no idea what I was doing. You know, it was so bad. I was telling someone recently that someone from out of town did a drop in at my box, and while I was teaching in inverted commas the power clean, they suddenly remembered they had a dinner appointment.
Convenient, eh? Convenient.
This is how bad I was at coaching at that point, you know, and that was a thing for me, a trigger to say, okay, wow. Maybe I should really focus on getting better first. Mm-hmm. So I decided to go on a journey where I was going to get with the people that I viewed as being the best at their individual components of what made up CrossFit. Mm-hmm. So I went first of all to train with Jason Kalipa, and then, you know, I went to people like Ed Cohen, who's the greatest powerlifter of all time, Derek Poundstone, who'd been second in World's Strongest Man, Diane Fu, Kelly Starrett, all these other people, and I tried to get information from them that I could use back at my own gym.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. When was that first workout in Seoul for CrossFit? Was it 2015?
Yeah, back maybe 2011, 2012.
Okay, like nice. That. Yeah, I know because I got into myself and a couple of friends. We were always training in the park and stuff here in the west of Ireland. And it was 2008, I think. I remember I was in the States 2007, came back 2008, and realized that I was really close to Stanford and like Rob Orlando's gym and stuff. And I only realized that when I came back. I was like, damn it! It was so nice to go and check it out. So that's how you would have you were doing primarily martial arts coaching before that. Did you have any other background in different sports, or was it primarily in combat sports that you would have been doing beforehand?
Yeah, that's right, just combat sports. So I started when I was very young, like I was doing wrestling. When I was maybe 4 or 5 years old, my dad started me at a wrestling club. He was very keen for me to do something physical. He was powerlifting champion, so he was very keen for me to be physical. My brother had been a British wrestling champion, so he wanted us to do something physical. So
sweet.
I started with wrestling, and then I moved to karate later.
Okay, excellent. Good stuff. So your main emphasis, I suppose, and having dealt with and learned from the likes of just Kalipa or Kelly Starrett or some of the best powerlifters and the best powerlifting entities in the world. You've come back towards a heavy emphasis on strength, or you've always been very appreciative of, I suppose, or more and more so now. Can you speak a little bit about how you came towards coming back to the strength orientation of your coaching philosophy? If that's okay.
Yeah, I think the first realization I had that strength was going to be very important in terms of CrossFit training was when I went to train with Derek Poundstone.
Mm-hmm.
So I went out to his gym, which is also in Connecticut, not far from Rob Orlando's place, and we were having a discussion about, you know, strength and fitness and so on and so forth. And as I was a typical sort of Kool-Aid drinker at that time, you know, I was giving him the kind of, yeah, I know, but you wouldn't be able to do a workout, right? You know, if we put you in a CrossFit wad, then, you know, you'd just fall apart. And he showed me a video, which is on YouTube, actually, where he does the workout Grace, which is 30 clean and jerks for time at 60 kilo, and he does it in 57 seconds. And he said, well, you see, the stronger you get, the more and more sub-maximal all these weights become. So, like, for me, 60 kilogram means nothing. So he didn't really hit that point of, you know, the pain cave that everybody else goes into. So it was at that point that I started to think a little bit more about how we could use strength in terms of training to be more athletic. And I think then it was looking into the carryover from strength to the different physical skills. So we had Jim Carley and Bruce Evans of Dynamax identified these 10 general physical skills for us. And, you know, we got strength, speed, power, agility, and so forth. And it was just, you know, that each one of those physical skills only impacts itself apart from strength, which impacts all the other skills. It's one thing I talk about when I'm doing my seminars is, you know, if we want to become a faster sprinter and we wanted to go out and we worked on your sprint times, you know, for the next 6 to 8 weeks, would your sprinting improve? Yes. Would your squat increase? No. Why, if we did the other thing, right, and we put your squat up, right, would your sprint times get better? Most likely they would, because we've increased the recruitment of the motor units in your legs, and we've improved your ability to create reaction force against the planet. So therefore, strength was a more general physical skill, and is more applicable to athletics, because strength is training, and the other things are merely practice.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting concept within, especially within CrossFit, or the functional fitness kind of world these days, that the strength may have taken a bit of a sidestep, and it's now kind of it's important, fine, but now the aerobic capacity is a huge buzzword, and there's a lot more orientation towards gymnastics, which is fine and well, but I think a lot of time, you just like you mentioned there, the basic ability to actually build some basic strength and build some foundational strength is number one priority in all of those, be it gymnastics strength, basic strength, or strict strength. It still is a strength orientation. So I suppose a lot of people will look at strength as just maybe the barbell lifts, so your deadlift, your squat, your bench, etc. Would you be of the same, or would you do you consider the body weight strength just as vital as some of the barbell oriented strength?
Well, I believe that absolute strength increases the other types of strength. Obviously, we've got different modalities of strength. As you said, we've got relative strength, which is your body weight strength. We've got speed strength. You've got strength speed, right? You've got agility strength, and so on and so forth. But there's many, many different ones which we could get into. And absolute strength will have a sort of an impact on all of them. Again, I believe that those are very important to work on, but they will improve as absolute strength continues to improve. And what I mean by absolute strength is it has to have three key components. It must have an eccentric phase, a concentric phase, and a static start. So therefore, we could say a touch and go deadlift, for example, is not absolute strength, because only rep one has a static start. The lifts such as the snatch and the clean are not absolute strength, because at heavy load, they don't have an eccentric component. Right, so they're not as suppressing to the central nervous system. And I think this is the mistake that a lot of CrossFit gyms have made, is that they base their strength program on the Olympic lifts.
Mm-hmm.
But the Olympic lifts strength, their power. And also to come back to what you're saying about this aerobic capacity being a big buzz, you're absolutely right, it is. And it's not. This is not different from any other industry, in that people look at the key performers in the industry and try to emulate what they think.
Yeah.
But what you've got to remember is, when we're looking at people like Katrin Davis' daughter, because this is the exact conversation I had with her, is she is already strong.
Yeah.
She is so much stronger than general population. Therefore, she no longer needs to get any stronger to perform a task at her given sport. So aerobic capacity has become the differentiating factor for her, whereas general populations are not that strong and probably need to improve their strength first. Given that, you know, you can implement aerobic capacity or VO2 max in a matter of weeks, you cannot implement strength that quickly.
No, I think that's a great point, because the recently, I suppose, that mentality, and I've spoken to a number of people in the last few months about that exact point, that there is a certain stage, once you get towards regionals level of ability, or once you get towards the games level of ability, you've gone through the gate of a certain strength level or a certain capacity. So you don't need to overdo it. So you likely will just be able to top up on bits and pieces like that and still move it forwards. Whenever I bring somebody into the gym as a fundamentals or a new person, I'll always look at the 10 general physical skills, and we'll kind of break it down in a little bit of a graph. And I'll say to them, like, look, there's a handful of areas here that are likely to be your biggest ports of call to begin with. Whether it's flexibility or whether it's strength, or whether it's and it's rarely coordination or balance or anything like that. It's usually a little bit of an offshoot. But the biggest part is that I'll get people that are relatively strong, but they could be getting much, much stronger. They could really express an awful lot more strength if their flexibility allowed that. So they have a lot of blocked up available potential. I don't know if you what do you think on that, but I just find that so regularly happening, that people's flexibility is blocking their ability to gain more and more strength.
So somebody asked me this exact question yesterday. A coach asked me, you know, Kevin, I have a student that cannot get themselves below parallel in the squat. What do you think is causing this? And I said, well, we have two possible scenarios. Number one, they're lacking the flexibility to get into that position. Number two, they're lacking the strength. So one is neurological, and it's a protective mechanism. Your body is very, very good at stopping you from going into a position that it will not get back out of. Secondly, it could be physiological, which is simply that they cannot do it because they cannot get that range of motion due to flexibility. So if you want to fix this, you're going to have to identify which one's causing the problem. And I think a regression to the air squat is always going to be the answer.
Yeah.
Because if they can't air squat, we know that it was flexibility. If they can air squat, we know that it was lack of strength.
Yeah. And I agree. I had a guy in just actually late last week, and that exact scenario happened where I brought him in. He's a timid enough kind of man, new enough to it, but a little bit nervous, etc. And it took me a little while now to get him into the squat, because he was a bit unsure. And I was like, okay, this might be a little bit of flexibility. But then after a little while, could ref definitely achieve the squat to a medicine ball, et cetera, no problem. And really actually ended up doing it quite well. But a huge amount of this was just learning the movements and also not being afraid of it, like actually building the consistency. But now the ability to maintain that would be very questionable over a lot of reps. So this is where I think the next kind of thoughts are, for your own coaching philosophy, be it in a class environment or in an individual environment, I'm assuming that your priority is quality of movement paramount, and then loading the strength upon that. Do you have a particular coaching philosophy in that kind of direction, or obviously it changes from you or people or beginner athletes or kind of regular average Joes to your games athletes?
Yeah, I think it does change. And this is the challenge, not just for me, but for gym owners everywhere, is that is how do you personalize a group training environment?
Mm.
Like, you know, we've got a class, sometimes classes, 20 people.
It's pretty hard.
Right, it's very, very difficult.
Very difficult.
So, yeah, you're right. I think that movement pattern has got to be paramount because one thing I always tell people is you can never, ever load bad movement.
Mm.
Can't do that.
No.
So that's the thing is if I'm seeing an athlete coming in the gym and I'm seeing Falco's knee, which is obviously the knee's caving in, I need to figure out how I'm going to fix this before I load that position. Because if their knees are caving in under the bare bar, then their knees are going to cave in a lot worse, under 100 kilo, 120 kilo. So as a coach, we have to figure out how to appropriately regress movement while still catering for the fact that the athlete has an ego. It's one thing that can be very difficult because people will go, well, I can squat 200 kilo. You can, but you squat 200 kilo badly.
Yeah.
And so it's going to result potentially in injury. So it's how we can regress people and allow them to buy into the process that this is what's going to be best for their progress, ultimately. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the biggest challenges in a group training environment, is how to appropriately scale and regress for everybody. That's why I think that potentially in the future, we're going to see this middle ground sort of training where we've got groups of people coming in and doing strength and conditioning may disappear.
Yeah,
the article was split, you know, into super, super cheap type of boot camp scenario and very, very high-end bespoke training. And I think it's already started. I mean, so many gyms you go into and people are on their own programs.
Yeah.
Programs where they have a remote coach, right? So this middle ground is vanishing. And I think it's a bad thing and a good thing. I like the group training environment because as per my first CrossFit experience, it makes you work harder than you ordinarily would.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But the downside of it is you can't personalize the outcome for people.
I think it's a very challenging situation. I'm a head coach in the gym that I work in at the moment, and our ability, we've got a lot of people, I suppose, who've been with us for a good while, so they have a good awareness of a lot of the movements. But it's taken, like, I like to look at it as glacier coaching. It takes years and years of chipping away and steadily just tiny little movements day on day, and even still some of the best athletes in the gym have massive issues, so we can still find them and go, okay, look, we have to try and find some way of making a little bit of progress but also keeping you extremely safe and trying to build on good quality movements. It really, really is a big difficulty. I think that's one of the things, though, and I'll probably speak to you a little bit about some of the remote coaching type of emphasis, I suppose. Even speaking about the likes of Catherine and different people like that, and some of the more higher awareness branding programs that we would know about, I think some of them can be difficult to individually tailor. But could you speak a little bit about your own experience of how valuable remote coaching on an individual basis has been for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, the thing I think about this remote coaching is you're absolutely right in the sense that it's some way for me like a very, very good marketing tool, because you might have a company that has three or four people go into the games, but what the general population doesn't see is that it's really a funnel system, right? So it sucks in 5,000 people at the top, and it spits out four people that were already extremely gifted athletes. So. And then, you know, people say, okay, well, you know, Catherine is following, you know, comp train, and, you know, someone, you know, Jamie Green and Thurdy, they're following training plans. So I'm going to get on that because that's my favorite games athlete. But the problem with this remote coaching is that it's not individualized again. So what you've got is you've got a bunch of, again, general templates going out, right? So this is happening. I'm quite familiar with a lot of these things, and I've had conversations, for example, with China Cho. I was at her gym in December, and saying, okay, you're doing great on Misfit. Do Misfit give you something unique and individualized for you? No, right? Do you follow the general template? Yes. So again, I mean, I don't really see the difference between going and following comp train or Misfit's general template, following your own gym general template, apart from the fact that you've now taken away the coaching element.
Yeah. It can be really challenging, yeah, very much. I think that one of the interesting... Go on.
For me, as well, I did have, like, remote coaching clients. I do. But I made the mistake at the beginning as well of taking on novices,
mm-hmm.
which I no longer do. I've had to say to them, look, I think the best thing for you to do is go find a CrossFit gym or a functional fitness facility nearby you to have some hands-on coaching, because whilst I believe that I can write you a program that will progressively overload you, right now, via video, I'm really not able to fix these problems.
No.
You need someone that can see this from multiple angles and someone that can put their hands on your body and show you what position they want you to be in. Yes. So that's the thing, is like remote coaching can help, but I think it can only really help to guide a missile. Right? You know what I mean? I'm just like trying to bring people in and put them on a program. If they have severe movement pattern disorder, I can't help them on life.
Yeah.
The best thing is to go to a gym.
I think that's one of the, and I suppose this will bring me on to the kind of next point, and the a lot of the lessons you would have learned from working with some of the very, very highest level coaches in the world. I would have been and I suppose I still am a big fan of the likes of Mark Rippetoe and your kind of starting strength type of an orientation. Do you have any thoughts on how, I suppose, on how gyms or coaches can start dovetailing that kind of thing into their classes, or have you found any good success with that over the last number of years, or is it still just as much of a challenge to integrate those little kind of 6 week blocks of strength and then the 6 week block of gymnastics or da da da? Have you found much of that kind of an orientation?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the idea behind the name here, which is strength bias, right? I mean, I'm a huge fan of Mark Rippetoe. I've been out to Wichita Falls Athletic Club to train there. Now, the thing about Rip is that he wants people to give up what they like doing in order to get stronger.
Yeah.
Right? He said, okay, you know, strength is the most important of all these general physical skills. So what we're going to do is we're only going to focus on that. Then later on, we'll come back and do what we're doing.
Get the conditioning out, yeah.
If you look at all those guys that are training there, it looks like they forgot to come back to the condition. Right?
Yeah.
So that's all well and good, but you know, the thing is, we cannot ask somebody to give up what they like doing for any period of time in order to, if that's not what's going to make them happy. You know, results are one thing, but satisfaction and happiness is another. And people, we're not dealing with professional athletes, although we call people coming to our gym athletes. You know, people just want to have fun and enjoy themselves as well as having. And this is the problem with a model such as stuff. So it expects you to give that up completely. So the idea would be how we can bias towards strength while still maintaining the ability to give people their wants every single time. So it is possible. It's not the optimal way to get strong. But it's the optimal way for you to keep people happy and keep running a business.
Yeah, very much. Do you have any thoughts on the regularity of adding in deadlifts, squatting, benching, etc.? Or have you any preference for a type of scheduling for that to go along with the workouts?
Yeah, I mean, just one time a week on each. I don't prescribe the bench press usually for CrossFit athletes, because I just don't believe it's as functional as the standing overhead press.
Yeah.
Like, the standing overhead press has the longest kinetic chain. You know, the distance between the barbell load and the ground is the largest. So you have a huge amount of muscle mass in between all that that has to stabilize the load overhead. So I think it's very functional, whereas I don't believe that the bench press is as functional. So if I would choose one or the other, I would choose the standing overhead
press.
Deadlifting, yes. So I usually put a squat in on a Monday. And by the squat, I mean the low bar squat. Because I believe that in my experience, because I must have been in 400 or 500 gyms now visiting, is that it seems to be an awful lot of people are suffering from patellar tendon problems. And that's pain directly under the kneecap. And I believe it's because we do so many things in CrossFit that takes the kneecap through a full range of extension and flexion, right? So a low bar squat is important because it just gives your knees a little break. So, you know, if you go out and coach box, you're going to see the high bar squat, the front squat, the overhead squat, the wall ball thruster, right? And all these things anatomically look quite alike. So I like to put the low bar squat in. I usually do that on a Monday. and then I'll put the press on a Wednesday, and I put the deadlift on a Friday. Mm-hmm. Gives people a chance to cover Monday to Friday from the movements that are lifting the heaviest weight.
Yeah.
Squat and deadlift.
Mm-hmm. With the low bar, that's an interesting one. Like I like the low bar a lot. I think it's fantastic. I think it is a challenge sometimes because the shoulder mobility of most people is challenging, to put it mildly. So trying to obtain those good positions can be difficult in a high bar setup. But I think that's one of the second issues is if you have, I definitely know for a fact, if people have shoulder mobility issues, it's highly likely that that's going to feed into hip mobility issues, whether that's inadvertent or it's just because of the patterning. Do you have any thoughts on the validity of the high bar for the transfer into the Olympic weightlifting movements, your front squats, your etc.? What's your thoughts on that? Out of curiosity.
I don't really like the high bar particularly as an argument that it carries over to the clean, for example, because you don't catch the bar behind your head. So I think anatomically, if we're going to use it, so this is one thing I was saying recently, we just think we should gain training and practice. So if you want to get better at cleaning, the most important thing is you've got to up your deadlift and you've got to up your front squat.
Yeah.
Both of those are the training. Then the clean will be the practice. So the optimal way to improve the clean will be to up the two strength movements that that come close the clean. In terms of preferring a low bar over a high bar, it's just because we know that the hip is a class one lever. So therefore, we know that the closer the load goes to the pivot point, which is going to be the hip, the more weight you'll be able to move, because that's how a class one lever works. So in a high bar position, you've got, that bar is just a little bit further away from the pivot point, so therefore it's just a little bit heavier. Also, I think that the number of people coming into gyms, like you're talking about hip mobility, we're talking about shoulder mobility, I mean, it's ankle mobility is a huge problem. So this dorsiflexion, which is, the ability to close the angle at your ankle, is terrible for the general population.
Therefore,
what we see is something else in this chain of joints moves to facilitate the dorsiflexion. And usually what it is the hips going back and the shoulders going forwards, which results in people just losing the squat to the front. So therefore, a low bar squat is going to be probably easier for general populations because it facilitates the bar staying over the middle of their foot, or what they call in the CrossFit level one, they want it over the frontal plane, without requiring a lot of dorsiflexion. So I think anatomically, it's a little bit easier for a larger number of people.
And I think that's extremely valid. I think it can be just a challenge because there will be, I suppose, a little bit of an apprehension towards a powerlifting mentality, and a lot of CrossFit members or coaches, etc., maybe looking at it going, okay, well, hang on. Not really going into too much powerlifting here, but I'm with you on this, that if there is I definitely utilize the high bar probably a little bit too much compared to the low bar with my members, but it definitely makes it easier to understand if it's a strength day, then treat it as a strength day rather than, okay, we're just doing a little hybrid and then we'll come back over to this. It's just ticking a box, it should be a fairly significant portion of the day if it is a strength day. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, also the question is people will say the exact same thing you just said, we don't really want a low bar, so we don't really want to get into this powerlifting thing. Say, okay, yeah, but right now you're getting really into the Olympic weightlifting thing.
Yeah.
Whereas I was under the impression that CrossFit was GPP. So if you guys have looked at me like Olympic weightlifters with high work capacity, then you may be not understanding the demographic within your gym. And I think that's another thing where it comes down to coaching and programming, is that my experience, a lot of gym owners and head coaches don't really seem to understand the people that are coming or what their role. I mean, this is one thing that I always thought that the global gyms do quite well, is that, when you join, the first thing you got is this questionnaire, it's a pre-activity questionnaire, RQ. One of the questions, what's your goal? But when they come to a functional fitness facility, this is, and this is the best way to train, so I'm going to make you train this way, irrespective of, you know, what your goal is.
Mm.
And that maybe a lot of gyms are splitting into specialized programs now. You know, they have a Olympic weightlifting club, they have a strength club, which has some powerlifting and some strongman, they have an endurance club. And I think that's a great idea, because whilst CrossFit is GPP, the general physical fitness, is that I think that a lot of people just use CrossFit as an introducer to things that they like or dislike. I mean, for example, I don't really go and do WODs anymore because I don't really find it as enjoyable as I used to, whereas I quite enjoy the strength component. So I think CrossFit is great for taking people that are maybe sedentary or not used to being athletic, and then letting them try a whole bunch of different things, gymnastics, like weightlifting, and then they can do what they want to do. And I think as coaches, we should try to facilitate this.
Yeah, very much. I think there's a lot of adjustment going on at the moment with that in a lot of different CrossFit gyms and a lot of even functional fitness gyms around the world, that there is that the significant skewing towards either different programs being brought on and separated out into. But I also think that's exactly it's a big challenge. I know we don't do as good of a job as we'd like of getting people to their goals as quickly as possible. It seems to be a bit more of a roundabout route. Do you have any particular advice for coaches that either are working in a remote capacity with individuals or in gyms in your typical kind of CrossFit gym? Do you have any particular advice for them when it comes to working in to programming strength? And how to really make sure that people can make good progress with their strength programming.
Yeah, so first of all, I would say that you have to keep it extremely simple.
Mm-hmm.
So irrespective of whether someone has been coming into your box and doing CrossFit for 3 years, the chances are they are probably still in a novice phase, right? Because if you've ever run a proper linear progression or progressive overload.
Yeah.
I think the most important thing is that you've got to keep it very simple. I think that there can be a shift towards what I've heard called entertainment, right? With training people whilst keeping them entertained.
Yeah.
This is obviously important, but they're going to get that when they do the workout. I think the strength component, unfortunately, has to be boring, because the human organism, as you know, if you're familiar with Ripito's work, it's just simply stress, adaptation, and recovery.
Yeah.
If we don't eat the same stimulus or stress slightly heavier than the week before, there won't be any adaptation to what's going on. You know, we don't really need, I remember I dropped into a CrossFit box in Scotland maybe 4 years ago, and I partnered with someone, and it was his first ever CrossFit class. He just finished their on-ramp or fundamentals course. And the lifting that day was a banded push press for like 3 fives or 5 threes or something.
Okay.
Like that.
Yeah.
And that's very conjugate and that's very.
Yeah.
But the thing is, that guy was just straight out of the armor. I don't think he needed to be doing a banded anything.
Yeah.
Like, he just needed to do some strict press.
Yeah.
Right. And this is the thing. So my advice, first part, would be that you've got to keep it simple. You've simply got to give them the same thing, slightly heavier than the week before. Now, typically when I'm programming strength, I like to use this thing which is called Prilipin's table, right? So Andre Prilipin, right, he worked all these, you know, rep schemes and sets, you know, and it would be total of 18 reps at 70% and 75%, 15 at 80% and 85%. What I do further to that is I added to Prilipin's table in the sense that we know that males and females have different neuromuscular efficiency. Right, you know, so a 1 rep max for a female and the 5 rep max on the squat, for example, will be much closer than a male. So those numbers will be further apart. It's one of the reasons why females jump on a smaller box than males. Their ability to contract suddenly is different. So what I would do is I would split it up. So if we know using Prilipin's table that we're doing 18 reps in a workout, then we know that females are better at large sets, they're going to do 3 sixes. Males are better at small sets, they're going to do 6 threes. Right? So I think something like that, you got to put some thought into what's going on as well. Understand that the women in the class are going to be a little bit different from the men. So, you know, give them neuromuscular efficiency, they've got to have different sets and rep ranges. Yeah, but apart from that, just keep it super simple.
Yeah.
They don't need complex energy. And if they do need complexity, it's only going to be when that progressive overload stops working.
Yeah, very much.
Right, to continue to add 2.5 kilo every single week to their squat, you don't need to change what's happening.
Very much. I think that's one of the, I did the CrossFit football course a few years back, and I would have always been a huge fan of those guys, but they were very, very straightforward on that. Like, look, we need basic linear progression. You can keep making hay for a long, long time if you just stick at it. And I think that's where even something like a weighted pull-up, even going towards, now you may not get complete absolute strength on it, but things like that, if it's a weighted dip, if it's a weighted pull-up, if it's something like that, it definitely heads in that direction. So it definitely helps a little bit more to build on that, rather than just high reps of your kipping or your whatever it is. It's valid for certain areas, fine, but I think something like that basic addition of 1.25 kilos or something like that, or a kilo a week, would definitely make a big difference over the months. The last thing, I suppose, Kevin, before I leave you to it, is there any particular next step coaching wise you have in mind, or any courses or any places you're going to? I know you're based in Iceland at the moment, working with some people there. How's that going?
Well, it's been snowing every day for the past 6 days, so I'm beginning to think, get me back to California. But next coaching steps for me is that, you know, I think one thing that's always defined me is like that I always want to learn more and more and more. So one of the reasons I started doing seminars and started traveling and coaching with people was that I felt that I didn't have enough knowledge, and I wanted to share more knowledge with more people. Like, you know, someone told me they thought I was a bit like a conduit, right? Because I've been to train with so many people. I have a very good memory, like some people have a photographic memory,
yeah.
I call it a filmographic memory, whereas I'm able to sort of replay all these things and then give the information to people. And I think that that's really important for me, is not to stop now, because I believe I have a mission to try and help coaches to get better if I possibly can, and share some information that they might be able to. So actually, I was planning to go back to Ripper Toes again.
Nice.
Because I learned a lot when I was there the last time, but as you know, you don't retain 100% of information at any point, you know? So no matter how good your memory is, I'm hoping to go back to Ripper Toes and do some stuff. I'm also going to be doing some seminars this summer with a girl called Leifa Ingalls, who was the very first winner of the Arnold Professional Strongwoman. I think she came second in the World's Strongest Woman. So I'm going to do some seminars together with her.
Excellent.
So it'll be sort of strength and strongman oriented stuff. So that'll be cool.
Super job. Nice.
Yeah.
Have you any, are you much of a reader? Are you any particular books you're reading these days? If you're into that.
To be honest, if people are looking for a recommendation of a book, I would always say Starting Strength.
A little bias.
It's probably going to be the one that has the most amount of information, that's the easiest for people to understand. Other books I've read recently, I read a really good book, which is a sports science book called Human Bioethics and Its Application, and that's by Brooks and Feeney. That's a really good book. It's very complex, but it's good because it talks about the energy systems and how to train in those energy systems.
Yeah.
So I think it's also something that coaches are misunderstanding a lot, because, you know, they bought of, you know, wads that are all here. Right, we don't really see a lot of that glycolytic pathway being hit in CrossFit, I think, in terms of gyms, because nobody's really doing that short elliptic endurance stuff. So, anything on the energy systems.
Nice, excellent stuff. Well, Kevin, that's us for the moment. I really, really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much for joining me. Where we can find you on strengthbiastraining.com, is that the place to find you?
That's the place, or on my Instagram, which is just strengthbiastraining as well. I probably use that more often.
No worries. Yeah, good stuff. Excellent. Well, we'll hopefully catch up with you at some stage very soon. Best of luck with the seminars and all your traveling. I definitely hope to catch up with you at some stage in person. I appreciate it for joining me, and we'll hopefully see you soon, Kim.
All right. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thanks a million. Cheers.